Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for coming. So the topic I chose to speak about, which is the extent of one's chiyuv in sukkah when one is traveling during sukkahs. The title is not my own. That's Roy Torchiner's. I've yet to learn the art of titles. I chose it for two reasons. Well, three, really. One, because I like the topic. Second, because in our tendency to prepare for the Chagim, we prepare for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and then we realize we have, 4 days till Sukkot, in which time we need to build a sukkah, and don't have time to learn about it. So I figured we should at least have some shiur on sukkahs. And the third is that much of the analysis that I'm going to be drawing on is from a tshuva. He didn't write many tshuvot, but from a tshuva from Mori Virabi Rav Lichtenstein Harini Kaparas Mishkavo, who passed away a few months ago. And there's been a concerted effort amongst his students to, at least during the first year, to share the Torah we've learned from him. And this particular tshuva ends with a very Rav Lichtenstein moment. So I wanted to find an opportunity to share Torah from Rav Lichtenstein. So those were my goals. What we're going to do here is we're going to examine this question. And if one is traveling, one is taking a tiyul, a trip, during Sukkot, do you need to build a sukkah? Do you need to find a sukkah? Can you eat outside while you're camping out in the middle of the forest? You're hiking up some mountain. Do you need to bring the pop-up sukkah? What is your obligation? Okay? So, we're going to start with section one, which is just the basic sources. Okay? So the pasuk says as follows, Basukot teshvu shivat yamim, you shall dwell in the sukkah for 7 days, kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukot. And the Gemara derives a principle from this pasuk, which is teshvu kein taduru. The parameters of your obligation in sukkah are based on how one would normally live. The way you normally live is the way you have to live in a sukkah. At which point something is considered something you wouldn't do in your house, so then you're exempt from sukkah. And this leads to a whole discussion in the Gemara of when exactly you're exempt from sukkah. So one of those exemptions is in source 2, Tanu Rabbanan, Holchei Drachim Bayom, Pturim in Asukkah Bayom, V'chayavin Balayla. Those who are traveling during the day are exempt during the day because they're traveling. And just like one who is traveling doesn't necessarily go back to his house to sleep, by definition, right? That would be very counterproductive. If one is taking a trip, right, you're driving from here to New York and nightfall comes and then you turn back, go to Toronto and sleep in Toronto so that you can start again in the morning, you haven't accomplished anything, right? You sleep on the way. But at night, when you're not traveling, so now you're chayav, and we'll see why that is later. Holchei drachim balayla, if you're a night traveler, right, you like to skip the traffic, so you like driving in the middle of the night, which in most cities works, and New York, it works against you, because when no one's supposed to be on the road, they close them for construction. Pturim in asuka balayla, v'chayav in bayom. Holchei drachim bayom balayla, if you travel all day, so then pturim in asuka bein bayom uvein balayla. And most Rishonim understand that this exemption is derived from the drasha I said before, teshvu, you should dwell, you should live in the sukkah, teshvu kein taduru, and you live in the sukkah the way you live in your house, and since you don't return to your house when you're traveling to sleep, so you don't return to your house when you are traveling and go to your sukkah. And that's how Rashi takes it. Right, he's alluding to that exemption. Tosfos says it explicitly in source 4, calls and nafka miteshvu kein taduru shekeshem adam beveto einom nimna milatzeit laderech. Just like someone doesn't hold himself back from traveling on a normal day, so too, one doesn't have to hold oneself back from traveling on Sukkot so that he can be in a sukkah. And then he says the other exemptions are also derived from this v'chein mitztayer, the notion that someone who is caused suffering by being in the sukkah depatru le'al min ha'sukkah hainu miteshu kein daduru de'ein adam dar b'makom she mitztayer, because people don't live where they suffer. Right, and now if we return to Rashi, right, this is the same sentiment. Geshem shekol hashana ino nimna milecha b'derech bischora. You go on business trips during the year, and we'll see that some of the modern commentaries think that Rashi meant specifically business trips, but the simple understanding is that Rashi says basically the same thing as Tosfot, that since you travel during the year, that's a normal thing to do, so if you're traveling on Sukkot, you don't have to go back home. Source 5 is the Shulchan Aruch. We rule in accordance with this Gemara, Holchei drachim bayom, pturim in asukah bayom, v'chayavim balayla, Holchei drachim balayla, pturim balayla, v'chayavim bayom. The Rama adds v'davka kishi yuchlu limtso sukkah, aval amena motzim sukkah yuchal leilech ledarko, av shelo yeshvu ba lo yom v'lo layla kishar yimod hashana she'eno maniach darko b'shum beit. He says this is obviously only if you can find a sukkah, but if you're a holchei derech bayom and there's no way of you possibly having a sukkah at night, then you're still allowed to travel just like you would normally travel, whether or not you could get back home day or night. So we would rather you sleep in the sukkah if you're not traveling at night. But if that requirement will prevent you from traveling to begin with, then that would be a violation of Teshuvu Kein Taduru for us to force you to remain home. And those who go to collect their loans during So those people should, they don't have to, they should go home at night and eat in their sukkah, even though there are reasons to be lenient, and this is going to become important, one who is stringent, one who is more stringent, he should be blessed. So,
the rule for that is the same as, let's say, trying to find a minyan.
We're going to return to that. That's going to be later. What exactly that means? How far do you have to go? That's going to be in section 4. We're not going to read all the sources inside, but in the basic sources, we'll read most of them inside, and then as we continue, we'll say things more. We'll summarize things outside. Okay. The Ritva in source 7 actually derives this exemption from a different source, not from Teshuvu Kein Taduru, but he quotes from the Ramban, V'yesh Lishol, Lama Nichtav HaEzrach Klal, right? The Pasuk, as we saw in source 1, said, Basukot Teshuvu Shivat Yamim Kol HaEzrach B'Yisrael, every citizen or denizen of Israel shall dwell in Sukkot. So why does that word include it? Shamati B'Shem Rabbeinu HaGadol HaRamban Zal, the Ramban said, Shabalomar Shalo Yitchayev B'Sukkot, Ela mishehu ke ezrach ra'anan prat leholchei drachim v'shomrei perot u'mitzayer v'chayotzei bahen. That the only person who can be obligated in a sukkah is someone who is acting as a citizen. But at the moment at which you're no longer acting as a citizen, you're acting as a sojourner, you're traveling, so then you are not in ezrach in your sukkah, right? Your sukkah would be on someone else's turf. And therefore that's a different level of tur. But the upshot of it is the same as Tosfot, right? Whether you think it's because of Teshuvu Kein Taduru, this is not called living, or it's not called being a citizen, it's called being a traveler. Either way, we assume that you are exempt when you travel, because that's not called the normal way of living. The Rashba in Source 6 notes that at some level, this seems odd. Right? Normally we don't say, you know, you're allowed to create a situation in which you avoid mitzvot. But he knows, right? This is source 6. This is surprising. Just because you want to travel, so now you exempt yourself from a biblical mitzvah? And he says, yes. Yesh lomar shakatuv kivao b'makom shadam dar. That is the uniqueness of sukkah. Sukkah is defined, you live in the sukkah the way you live in your house. And when you're traveling, this is not how you live. And So the Rajba, right, furthers this and says, it's not just that you can, it's not just it's a technical exemption, but that's how sukkah is defined. So even though normally we would say don't avoid mitzvot, in sukkah this is not avoiding the mitzvah. So the Derech HaMelech in Rishonim seems to be like this Rajba, that sukkah uniquely is defined as you should live in your sukkah the way you live in your house, and therefore you will find more expansive exemptions from sukkah than you do anywhere else. Therefore, while I wouldn't tell you, look, it's totally fine to travel if that means you're going to miss shofar and, you know, I don't know, Hanukkah candles or matzah, for sukkah you will. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein and many modern poskim did follow in his footsteps. Rav Ovadia Yosef bases himself directly on the tshuva of Rav Moshe. Rav Shlomo Zalman, for other reasons which we'll see, did not look so favorably on people taking tiulim on Sukkot. Right? The simple understanding would be that, in fact, if one wanted to take a tiul, go on a hike on Sukkot, right, so then you don't have to bring a sukkah with you, and you're allowed to even sit down and have a, you know, three-course meal up there at the top of the mountain, because you don't normally drag your house with you, so you don't drag a sukkah with you, and that's fine. But modern poskim, some of them, though we'll see, this is not all poskim, or maybe not even the majority, though it is some very heavy hitters, right? Once you put Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman, and Rav Ovadia Yosef in one sentence, there had better be big names on the other side, or this is a or this is the end of discussion. Source 8 is a Gemara in Menachot Mem Aleph, and if you want a summary of it, because it's a little bit hard to read, you can see on the second to last English page here, where the right, towards the end of the packet, where it says perhaps. This is from a summary of Rav Lichtenstein's article. Do you see this? Second to last English page. Third to last page on the story sheet. Right, it's a little bit complicated, so we'll even see just his summary of it. Right, perhaps the central halachic source in the Rishonim to clarify this issue is the laws of tzitzit. They built on the discussion of the Gemara Menachot 41a between the angel and Rav Katina. So this is the Gemara here from Menachot that both Rav Katina's summer and winter garments were technically exempt from tzitzit, and the angel chastised him, what will be with the mitzvah of tzitzit? Right? You're wearing these clothing, but you didn't put tzitzit on it. And Rav Katina says back to him, what do you mean? I don't have to, right? And it's just a positive mitzvah. I'm not obligated, so why am I going to get punished? And the angel said, right, God is angry, you're going to be punished. So the Gemara said, yeah. Bizman dika ritchan shinan. When it's a time of divine wrath, even those who avoid positive mitzvot are going to be punished. And the Gemara continues. This is now the third line. You can switch back and forth between the Hebrew and the English, whichever you're more comfortable with. E amart bishlama chovat gavrahu. So if you say it's a obligation that devolves on the person, that's why we can say that even though you're not wearing clothes that obligate you in tzitzit, still there's some problem with not wearing it. Eliyamar chovat talidhu. But if it's just an obligation on the piece of clothing that any foregarment clothing should have tzitzit on it, halo mechayva, you're not obligated. Elamai, so it must be chovat gavrahu. It's the obligation which devolves on the person. So even though it's true that you're not technically obligated unless you wear a four-cornered garment, so it's true that you're exempt, but you're evading tzitzit, and that's a problem. Evading a mitzvah, even if it's a legitimate evasion, still invokes divine wrath. Now, one could have taken this Gemara in one of two ways. Right? One would be to say that, in fact, it is permitted, but we still say there's more to life than just checking off the boxes. Sometimes you say, look, it's true I'm exempt, but it's a bad thing to avoid mitzvot. Rav Moshe doesn't take it this way. Rav Moshe takes it more in a strict halachic direction, which is, no, that it's in fact forbidden to avoid mitzvah. And we're going to come back to this Gemara at the end. So this is Rav Moshe's Tshuva in Source 9. Im mutar latzeit l'ta'anug ba'alma l'makom shelo yikeh lo sukkah. U'davar latzeit l'tiyul. going on a trip, l'ta'anug ba'alma, just for pleasure, l'makom shelo yehelo sukkah, where there won't be a sukkah, mistaber l'fiyani da'ati, it seems to me, sha'asur, it is forbidden, to hol chay drachim she'ita besukkah daf chavav, because the exemption of those who travel, k'shu davar l'arashut, shepotrin, al kol panim bayom, hu k'sholchin l'mischar. So the first thing he does is he argues, as I noted in Rashi, that he thinks that when Rashi says that the exemption is for those on business trips, it means only business trips, meaning, or the like. Meaning people who, it's not a mitzvah reason, but there's a need, it's not just l'ta'anug, it's not just because you want to. Meaning anyone who would have to leave his house, not wants to leave his house, but must, the exemption applies. But just to travel, it's not for any need. You can't do it because you don't really need it. Just because you want to is not enough. Now, like I said, this doesn't seem to be the conclusion, the simple conclusion of the Rashba and the Rishonim. Right? The Rashba says explicitly, right, he asked basically this question, how could I exempt myself from a mitzvah for just to travel? And he said, because Teshu Kindaduru, you travel during the year. And Sukkah is unique. But Rav Moshe doesn't take it this way. Neither does Shlomo Zalman or Rav Ovadia. And they say, no, you in fact cannot travel. Right? They take the Rashba's question, and while the Rashba gave an answer, they say, in a chanami, no, in fact, you are not allowed to simply exempt yourself from the Sukkah. The Haga Atzmecha. If someone likes camping out, not in tents, but just camping out under the stars, so the way he normally lives is under the stars, right? I mentioned to some people this is a thing in Israel, right? Sleeping on the beach for weeks at a time, under you know, no tent, no nothing. V'imkein lama maravim mitzar patur min asuka ayish lomar avilei lomar mishenen alisha v'chaser yoter miyubay v'asuka patur min asuka. If in fact you thought that worked, so then Rava should have just said anyone who likes sleeping outside instead of a sukkah is allowed to, but he didn't say that. Now the obvious retort to Rav Moshe would be, most people don't, right? Most people aren't, right, just sleeping outside. And also, that's not mitzvah. It's not, right, saying I like sleeping outside better doesn't mean I have pain sleeping inside, right? Mitzvah is a more limited tour. But that's Rav Moshe's argument. Right now, Rav Moshe says one could have said what I just said, that that's not quite the same to say that pain is the same as less enjoyment. Because people will leave their house if there's a leak in the roof, but they won't leave their house because their friend has a fancier house. Right? So one could have distinguished and said, you know, pain gets you out of your house, and just knowing that my friend has a better house doesn't. So the same thing here. I can leave the sukkah if I'm in pain, but not if I would rather be somewhere else. And being in a sukkah is like, you know, being in, you know, you consider it in the same way, whether I would go to somebody else's house. Lo mistaber zeh. I don't think that's true. I think it's more similar to someone who has two houses. And if you have two houses, Rav Moshe assumes that someone would always go to their second house if they enjoy it better. Now, Rav Moshe's psychological assumption, I'm not sure, is correct either. You know, this is apparently a Toronto phenomenon I'm now learning about. People like their cottages better than their house. That doesn't mean they live at their cottage. Right? There are other reasons why you live in your house. You don't always live in the house you like better. There are pragmatic reasons. So I'm not sure Rav Moshe is correct, just practically speaking, that people always leave their house, even if they have another one that they like better. Right? The same thing is true in your house. Right? You may like one room better. You know, it may be, like I know in my parents' house, the top of the house is relatively warm, Right? The basement is always cool. My father likes it cool, but he doesn't always leave his bedroom during the summer to sleep in the basement because it's your room. Okay, it's more comfortable downstairs, but there are, right, people even within their own house don't always look for the most enjoyable part of the house. So I'm just not sure that Ramosha's psychological assumption is correct. Anyway, so continuing in Ramosha, v'gam b'furash b'magen Avraham, d'im ein yichol l'ishen kol kach b'tov v'suka, then we'll get back to the Magen Avraham. And then if you just skip down, we'll come back to the Magen Avraham, so leave it for now. Four lines then, v'gam b'lo zeh, ha'nenshin al-aseh, b'idan rizcha. And then he quotes the Gemara in Menachot, and we know you get punished for not fulfilling an aseh. So Ramosha brings the Gemara in Menachot, along with a full-fledged halachic argument. It's not just meta-halacha, so to speak. Mi'ikra din, he thinks you're not allowed to nullify the mitzvah of sukkah, to exempt yourself from the mitzvah of sukkah, simply because you enjoy traveling. Now, in source 10, we won't read it inside, but Ramosha himself backed down a little bit. Someone asked Ramosha, what if it's to travel to Eretz Israel? What if it's to travel to Israel? Is that different? So Ramosha said, I'm not sure what you mean. Is it because of the mitzvah involved, right, of being in Israel, or is it because traveling to Israel is takes a lot of planning, costs a lot of money, and if, you know, to make someone on his trip not sleep in the hotel is a much bigger deal than normal. I don't know what you mean. He said that maybe I'm willing to accept that if, right, he says, right, we'll skim it. Im yesh b'zeh chiluk bein Eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, is there a difference in Israel or not? Lo katav kavod torato tam l'sveiko. I don't know why you asked this. Lo tam v'adein l'chalek, but ulai kavanato la'achid la'achad mi'chutz la'aretz shabah al hazman katzar l'Eretz Yisrael. If someone traveled in the little time he has to Israel, shekol tircha gdola v'otzah gdola ita b'shvil sh'rotzeh l'rod kol Eretz Yisrael ve'ein lo al zeh rak yamim mu'atin. Right, you wanted to come to see Israel. You don't have that much time. It costs a lot of money. Shulai etzlo yatzorech. So maybe that type of trip is closer to a real need. Lo in yan tiyul v'hanah b'alma, not just pleasure. It's more than a pleasure trip. Shalom niftar b'shvil anato yoter lishen b'bayit v'chutz misugad deriat mekamod hu lo tzarech kadol. Because seeing Israel for him, you know, camping out in Israel is just a big thing for him. Shalachin lazem b'stabesh t'mutarim enu yachol l'hiot od eze amin b'shvil tiyul. So he said, okay, maybe that's true. Maybe if it's a trip I couldn't have taken another time and it costs a lot of money, so okay, that's sort of a tzorech. But if that's the case, it's not about Israel, right? Who loved Afghar it's Israel? She issue like a mitzvah bazet. That's not just Israel, that would apply even traveling to Italy. Maybe Israel you'll add yet another one because there's some sort of mitzvah being in Israel. Maybe he's like, okay, I'm not backing down from my position, but if you push me into a corner from a really expensive trip, and especially if it's Israel, maybe. But Ramosha's general position, taken by Rabbi Avadia and by Rav Shlomo Zalman, is that they take Rashi's Lischora as a paradigm to say that really you're not exempt unless there's a need. And he formalizes the Gemara Menachot to say there's actually a prohibition to avoid a mitzvah. And therefore, the upshot would be if someone is traveling, is taking just a pleasure hike during Sukkot, he should bring a pop-up sukkah with him, or he should, you know, survive for the day on, you know, apples. Yes,
even
David.
If you're someone who travels all the time for business,
even according to Moshe's interpretation of Rashi, shall we say? Yeah. Other Rishonim, many of the Achronim point out Rashi probably didn't mean it, but yes.
Right. So even according to that way of understanding Rashi, if you're someone who travels all the time for business, then you can kind of pick and choose when you travel.
Right. So then that would be the same, right? If you could pick and choose, right? Presumably that would be the same. Again, you'd have to draw the line because, right, once Ramosha's saying, well, once he softened his stance a little bit, if it's really hard, then even traveling, so then the same set of calculations would come up with business. I could choose another time and that would be better, but if this is a better time, so then that would be a sort of tzarech. But yes, right, if that was the case, then one could distinguish even within the business case. Okay, now there are many, many poskim who argue on this, and they're also heavy hitters. For example, I put a list here of a few of them. One of them is Rav Lichtenstein, but also Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Yaakov Ariel, Rav Yashiv, also Rav Nissen Karelitz. Right, there are big names on both sides. So let's continue to examine the question of why one would be obligated or why one would be exempt. Okay. Another reason to say that you are obligated, right? Now, still the Chumrah, this is the basis of Shmuel Zalman's argument, is in source 2. There's an Oros HaRuah that says, V'yesh b'nei adam k'shein makizin dam b'moed ochlan chutz la'sukkah. Right, we know that one of the exemptions from eating in a sukkah is someone who's sick. So there are some people who wait till sukkah is to bloodlet, and this was considered medically efficacious. So they would wait till Chol HaMoed, because then they would get to say, I'm sick, and then they would eat inside. Okay? So the question arises, are you exempt from the sukkah if you created the situation that made you exempt? So this is what the Oros HaRuah is asking. They said, look, I have a headache. I'm not worse than someone who has a headache. V'taud hu bi'adam, it's wrong. De'ein hanikaz choleh. First of all, you're not sick. Right. First of all, you're doing it for health purposes, and you know everyone knows that after you give blood, they have the free cookies, right? Right. You're not sick. You're eating a lot. Right, it doesn't hurt you to eat. You want to sit down and eat, so go to the sukkah and eat. V'tu, furthermore, to have leish l'akid b'moed. And the second argument is, why do you do it on Yantif? Right, you should have done it el kodam or achar kach, or do it before or after. Dafilu gabe avel shabal l'tzar and melem and hashamayim. Even by an avel, where he is in objective pain, that's not his fault. But we tell him you have to sort of control yourself and right calm yourself down. And do the mitzvah. You shouldn't have given blood. So you don't get an exemption because you chose to bloodlet on Sukkot. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says the same thing is true, that if you choose to travel, that's not an exemption. The exemptions are when they happened, you didn't choose to create this situation of exemption, where they happen more mimela, right? They happened because that was just the way things were going, but you can't get yourself out. And this is Nisak and the Mogen Avram as well, in source 12. Shemik is dam, da simcha hulo, da marbe besuda, vegama yachol lasel vnei achag, lefi tamze, misha shodem mashka mishalshel. The Mogen Avram extends it and says, therefore, if someone would drink a laxative on Sukkot, which aval pisha mitzdar harbe, it is very much mitzdar. Right now, he's running to the bathroom a lot, and it'd be much easier to tell him you can camp out next to your bathroom. Mikol makom chayev b'sukkah. You're still chayev. Havel lasozo kodem achag o achrav. If you have some desire to drink a laxative, do it before or after Sukkot, not on Sukkot. V'chein lo yasene b'moed. This is beyond me. Nearly the pater misukah, but you know what? Okay, after the fact, it might be a little bit dangerous for you to be in the sukkah, so you shouldn't have done it. The sakana leishav sukkah, but really, 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 he agrees with this Oros HaRuah. So, Rav Shlomo Zalman uses this as an argument, a second argument for why one who chooses to travel for pleasure on sukkahs is not exempt. Rav Lichtenstein responds, and you find this in some of the other poskim, that this may not be true, lahalacha, for three reasons. One, I just gave you the English summary here, most Rishonim do not rule in accordance with the Oros HaRuah. So, right, that's number one. As most people say, that's just not true. As we saw on the Rashba, you are, in fact, allowed to travel on Sukkot, because Sukkot is Teshuva Kendadiru, you do what you normally do during the year, you travel, so you're allowed to, and that doesn't mitigate your exemption. Second, as we saw, is that even the Oros HaRuah himself offered two reasons. Either that bloodletting is not a sickness, and even if it is, a scheduled sickness, or we extrapolated trip, does not create an exemption. So according to the first reason, the tzul might still be exempt, right? If the question is, right, is this or is this not mitztayer or choleh, so then, right, it would have no application to the tzul case because you are in fact traveling. And number three, a practical concern is that even if we paskin like the Oros HaRuah, people have school the rest of the year, and if you're planning a trip, or a hike, you couldn't necessarily have done it before or after. The Oros HaRuah's argument is, if I could do it before or after, then I can't create a case of exemption, but you can't always do that. So there's two halachic reasons to reject it, either because it's a minority position, second, because the Or Zeruah himself seems unclear whether we actually rule this way, and third, even according to the Or Zeruah, even if he held that you can't create a situation of exemption, this may not be called creating a situation of exemption. I'm not going to read section 3 inside. Section 3 is an interesting conceptual question, which is, why is it that people traveling during the day are obligated at night? There are two ways of formulating that. Is it because they're not traveling at night, so they're not considered travelers? Or is it because they are travelers, but traveling is not a sweeping heter, it's not a sweeping exemption, it's just the person who's traveling who can't eat in a sukkah, right, must eat, right, doesn't have to eat in the sukkah, but if you're a traveler who can eat in the sukkah, then you have to, right? So obviously how we answer that question may affect how we rule here. Right? If you think that one can be a traveler and still obligated, so then we're more likely to obligate you. If you think that, no, the reason that at night you are not exempt from sukkah is because you're not traveling at night, you're not a traveler, then there's no model of someone who is a traveler who nevertheless must sleep in the sukkah. But that's a little bit complicated, so just leave that in the back of your minds, and we're going to go on. So, question that arose before is, okay, well, what does it mean, can get to a sukkah? Right? What? How do we define, right, is it possible to get to a sukkah? So there's two options. Right? One is to say that we know that the exemption from being in a sukkah is related to all other cases in the Torah where we don't impose on you too much. Right? The example you gave is, in fact, the example we'll see, where we say that someone, if he can go a certain distance to get to a minyan, 4 mil in front of him, 1 mil behind, so then he has to. If not, he doesn't have to. So is the exemption of holchei drachim and the exemption of ansukis a function of the general notion that we don't impose on you to do mitzvah too much, in which case, how far would you have to go? 4 mil. So you're hiking up the mountain, let's say, right? You know there's a sukkah in 1 hour and 5 minutes from you. Then you've got to wait the 1 hour and 5 minutes. But if it's 1.5 hours from you, then you don't. Or is this a local sukkah halacha of mitzta'er, of teshu kenta diru? And since somebody normally, right, let's say you're 1/2 hour from your house, you would say, you know what, it's not worth going back to my house. I'll just have an ice cream here. I won't go back and have lunch at home. So then, on sukkahs, if you're 1/2 hour away, then you wouldn't have to, right? Which model are we using? A local sukkah model? In which case, ein lo sukkah is defined by how far you would walk to your house rather than eat where you are? Or is it a universal halacha? So that is a machlokes, Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Magen Avram. This is 16 and 17. The Magen Avram says that it is a local sukkis halacha, right? The heavy bechal mitzar, or v'layla rishon mitzar chayev emet tzarech lajoch leilach sukkah chaveiro. The Magen Avram at the beginning of Siman Tav Reish Lamed Tet says that the exemption is actually a function of the universal halacha. And again, the application of that would be how far would you have to be from a sukkah to be considered? Oh, far from a sukkah, right? The normal, let's say, 4 mil, or simply the distance that you would not bother going home to eat your meal if it were during the year. That's section 4. The next halachic issue in 5 is a machloket between the Magen Avram and the Livush. And I gave you the Bir Halacha. There's also two positions in the Me'iri. What does it mean when we say that the holchei drachim, the travelers, are exempt? So the Bir Halacha summarizes as follows. Da, you should know. Da achronim mechulakin b'feirusha. Da halivush, the levush holds as follows. Demasha amru pturin bayom. What does it mean you're exempt during the day? Hainu she'ein sarach lam tin milach olachi yagil l'sukkah. You don't have to wait to get to a sukkah. Unless, you know, obviously there's a sukkah there, you have to eat there, that's true. So what does it mean you're obligated at night? When you come to sleep, the question is, do you have to look for the sukkah or not? Right? If you come to a city where there are sukkahs, so then you have to eat there. But if there isn't, you don't. The most we would ever make you do is look for a sukkah. But let's say you were traveling, and at night, in order to sleep in a sukkah, you would have to not find a sukkah, but build a sukkah, then you're exempt. So when the Ramah says, you're obligated at night, as long as you can find a sukkah, it means find a sukkah. And then if you skip the next line, Vidara Magen Avraham, the Magen Avraham says, no, Dimash Amru Turin Min HaSukkah, what does it mean, exempt? Biyom Hayudavka Im Kshegil Malon Patur Litroach Laso Cham Sukkah Beina Ochel, Kevin Shadatam Melech La'altar V'chayavin Balayla La'asod Sham Sukkah, Kevin Shenach Sham Afilu Imlan Eitzal Nachri, Im Yesh Lo Sham Ima La'asod Sukkah. The Magen Avraham says, no, when we say that the person traveling during the day has to eat in a sukkah at night, it doesn't mean you have to find a sukkah, it means you have to build a sukkah. So, now, according to this, bringing it to our case, so let's say you're traveling, right? According to the Levush, the question always is with a traveler, is, are you obligated to look for a sukkah? Right, so, if you're traveling, so even at the, if one would say that you're obligated to eat in a sukkah because at this moment you're not traveling, all you would have to do is look for a sukkah. But let's say there isn't one, you don't have to bring a pop-up sukkah with you. You have to look around. You don't have to build one. You don't have to schlep the extra weight on your back. According to the Magen Avraham, if there's going to be a point at which you stop traveling, so then what would you have to do? You have to build a sukkah, which means you have to bring the sukkah with you. Now, that may not be true because the Be'er Halacha continues and said, but probably everyone would agree that if it's a real, real, real hurdle to build a sukkah, then you don't have to do it either, right? I mean, because then it would be mitzayer, or it wouldn't be holchei drachim, it would be like, you know, eating in the rain, right? If I, you know, if there aren't pop-up sukkahs, I have to bring, you know, those, you know, four of those huge wooden boards, right? Hiking with that on your back is more than just a holchei drachim exemption. That would be mitzayer. And then he lists that the Achronim split, and he himself rules like the more lenient position of the Levush, that even when we say that you have to, that at night you have to eat in a sukkah, it means you have to find one, you're never chayav to build one. So, coming back to our traveling case, right, even if you were machmir like Rav Moshe, all that would mean is, okay, the exemption doesn't apply, so I'm like someone who's traveling at night, I need to look for a sukkah, but I don't need to build one, so even according to Rav Moshe, it's possible that, okay, so I'm not totally exempt, I have to search around the area for a sukkah, if there isn't one, I'm still exempt. But if you combine Rav Moshe and the Magen Avraham, so I wasn't allowed to leave, which means Holchei Drachim doesn't apply to me. So if Holchei Drachim doesn't apply to me, then I have to build a sukkah. So if I'm going to travel for leisure, then I need to actually schlep the boards on my back up the mountain. Okay? okay. Rav Lichtenstein actually, we'll see, he's more makil in general, but he actually rules like the Magen Avraham and not the Levush. Though he does provide explanations for the Levush, right? The effort involved in making a sukkah for the night is of the degree that in mitzvah in general the Torah would not obligate it, right? So it could be that the Levush thinks you're exempt because you never have to go to that much effort for a mitzvah, and he compares it to the one-fifth ceiling on stukkah expenses, or it's a local exemption, namely that it's not teshuv kein tadiru, either because, right, that's not something one would normally do, or you normally wouldn't build a second house. Right, two variations on the Teishu Kein Tadiru exemption. Okay, so now we have all the factors in place. So now let's put them together. So we saw first question that we have to ask is, is the exemption of Holchei Drachim only for people who are traveling for a need, for business and the like, or even for leisure? Reb Moshe, Reb Shlomo Zalman, Reb Ovadia, or Machmir, Reb Aaron, Reb Asher Weiss, Reb Zalman Nechemia, Reb Eliashiv, Reb Nissen Karelitz, or Mekil. That's question one. Question two is, even when you're allowed to travel, so if you created the situation of Ptur, right, do you lose the exemption of Holchei Drachim, the Or Zerua, is used by Reb Shlomo Zalman to say yes. So it's not just that it's not a legitimate travel, but anytime you create the exemption yourself by will, you are not exempt. The response to this by Reb Lichtenstein is that most Rishonim don't rule that way. The Or Zerua himself is unsure whether it's true. And practically, not all Tiulim can be scheduled for a different time. The next question we dealt with is, okay, even if you're going to say you are chayav, how far do you have to go? Right? Is it a mitztayer exemption, and therefore as much as I would normally walk back to my house rather than eat where I am? Or is it a rule that we borrow from Kol HaTorah Kula? So let's say 72 minutes, right? If I'm traveling, if I am chayav in the sukkah, I have to walk 72 minutes before I choose to eat outside of the sukkah. And then we said, and even in the cases when you are chayav to build a sukkah, what does that mean you're chayav? Does it mean you're chayav to look for a sukkah or build a sukkah? If even in all these cases you're only chayav to look for one, so okay, I traveled, I shouldn't have. So now I'm chayav, I can't just eat where I am. I have to look for a sukkah. But if in fact I look for the sukkah and it's not there, then I am exempt. If you hold a Gemara in Avram, then if you combine your motions that you shouldn't have gone, so you don't get the Ptur of Holchei Drachim, then not only do you have to look for a sukkah, but you in fact have to build one. Lahalacha, like I said, Reb Moshe Feinstein is machmir. Then unless it's really, really, really hard for you to travel during other times of the year, don't travel. And if you do, you have to find the sukkah, maybe even build the sukkah. Reb Shlomo Zalman rules that way, Reb Ovadia Yosef rules that way as well. If you are mekil, though, right, so then that would mean that you are, in fact, allowed to. And, you know, I put two examples of people who are mekil who are more explicit in their argumentation. We're not going to get to it, but if you want, you can look at source 18, where Rav Yaakov Ariel adds even more dimensions to this discussion to just complicate it even more. The question of whether eating outside of a sukkah is just a nullification of a positive commandment, or there's also a lav, which would change the stakes of the game. But you can, I'll leave that to you to look at on your own time. Let's look at Reb Lichtenstein's summary here. However, on second thought, the whole dispute about whether day travelers must build a sukkah to stay at night might be irrelevant to the situation at hand. Even according to Magen Avraham, if day travelers reach their destination right at dinner time, they would not have to postpone their meal until after they finish building the sukkah. So as we pointed out, that it's very nice to lay this out logically, but practically this may be incorrect. As the Be'er Halacha said, even the more machmir positions say that you don't have to go, right? If you get there at dinner time, you don't have to build a sukkah, because delaying my meal the 3-4 hours it takes to put up even a temporary sukkah, that is mitztayer. They likewise need not finish up their business dealings early in order to enable them to build a sukkah right before dinner time. Rather, they go about their business as usual, and when they finish, build a sukkah for eating if they have enough time before their normally scheduled dinner or for sleeping. This is all included in the principle of Teshu Kein Dediru that rules that one need not alter normal living habits in order to live in a sukkah. Therefore, the Magen Avraham only obligated day travelers to build a sukkah at night when they finish the business of the day. However, certainly one who devotes the night to the same activity as he did during the day, what the Gemara calls Holchei Drachim Bayomu Valayla, meaning all of this assumption assumed that travelers are essentially Holchei Drachim Bayomu, not Valayla. But if people are traveling all day, or alternatively, it's a day trip, so the whole time they're traveling, they are Holchei Drachim, so then the Magen Avraham Levush discussion is not relevant. The only discussion that's relevant is Reb Moshe's discussion, is does the fact that you didn't have to travel today allow you to use the Heter or not? Right? The Levush Magen Avraham discussion is irrelevant. So next paragraph, it follows that youth groups involved in organized tefillah would not be obligated, even if they were able to build a sukkah at night. As is well known, the night is not only a period to rest from the day's activities. Night activities are an organic and integral aspect of the tefillah. The participants are precisely categorized as day and night travelers as long as they are involved in the goals and activities of the tefillah. They are not, even according to the Magen Avraham, obligated to build a sukkah unless there is time to do so during the period when the night's activities end and when they go to sleep or eat. By that time, it is usually impossible, realistically, to build a sukkah. Therefore, the conclusions that follow are, it is permitted to go on a trip during Chol HaMoed Sukkot, even if it is clear that the participants will not be able to perform the mitzvah of sukkah during the tefillah. If during the tefillah they reach, or on the normal or scheduled eating or sleeping time, a place where there is a sukkah, they are able to enter, they must eat or sleep there. How to define the area and the distance that exempts them still needs clarification, which we mentioned before. If they finish the tefillah at night and stay in the place where they are able to build a sukkah, they're obligated to do so. To what degree they must exert themselves also demands further clarification. If the activities of the tefillah extend late enough so not enough time is left to build a sukkah before sleeping time, they are exempt from building one. Okay? So, to summarize the halachic issues, again, we have Rav Moshe, Rav Avadya, Shlomo Zalman, who basically say, either because you're only exempt when you travel at Tzorech, or you're only exempt if you didn't put yourself in a situation of Chiyuv. So if you choose to go on a leisurely trip during Sukkot, you are obligated. The response to those arguments are either the Ptur of Holchei Drachim is true even if you choose to travel, as the Rashba says explicitly. We may not paskin like the Or Zeruah, that putting yourself in a situation of ptur is a mechayev, and secondly, people can't always go on trips, not during Chol HaMoed. The Levush and Magen Avraham's discussion of, at night, what are you obligated to do, to build a sukkah or find a sukkah, is an interesting academic question, but for most day trips is not relevant, because you're always traveling. Even if you are staying overnight, if you're doing night activities, then even according to the Magen Avraham, you are a traveler day and night. If you are traveling during the day and just camping at night, so then, yes, the Machloket and the Magen Avraham and the Levush is relevant, right? You're going an overnight trip. According to the Levush, you just have to look for a sukkah. And you don't need, if there isn't a sukkah, you don't have to bring one with you. According to the Magen Avraham, you would have to bring one with you. But there's the caveat that if it's too much of a hassle to carry the sukkah with you, then even according to the Magen Avraham, your pots are not because of Holchei Drachim, but because of Mitztayer. So, Rav Moshe Udimei take the stringent position, Rav Lichtenstein, Rasher Weiss, and the like take the more makel position and say you do not need to. However, the last thing I want to touch on is come back to the Gemara in Menachot. So as we saw, Rav Moshe takes that as a hard and fast halachic Gemara, that there's an isser to create a situation of exemption. There's a prohibition to try to exempt yourselves, and if you do, it doesn't work. And therefore, he says, Mi'ikar ha-din halachically, straight black and white letter of the law, you are obligated to eat in the sukkah if you're traveling for pleasure. As we saw, Rav Lichtenstein and others think that's not the case. Right? That from the black and white letter of the law, you are exempt. Doesn't matter that you put yourself in the situation. Teishu Kein Tadiru says that you're traveling, you travel during the year, you don't bring your house with you, you don't have to bring a sukkah with you. But the Gemara in Menachot, if not understood halachically, should be understood how? Not as, to use Richard Dworkin's formulation, not a duty of obligation, but a duty of aspiration, right? That there is more to life than law. Right? There are things that we have to do and things that we should strive to want to do, that are valuable even if not obligatory. And in a very Lichtenstein moment, right, he continues, this is source 19. Again, this is a translation from the Hebrew, but it's a relatively good translation, and it gets the point across. Up until now, we spoke from a purely and exclusively halachic vantage point. However, on a practical level, the matter seems radically different. One should be firmly and sharply opposed, both educationally and from the perspective of Jewish beliefs and values, to tulim or activities organized in a way that involves not observing the mitzvah of Sukkah. The existence of formal exemptions from positive mitzvot is not the exclusive nor the only decisive way of gauging whether to perform them. We do not speak of actual evasive trickery. We're not talking about harama, itself a significant problem in halacha and belief, and this is not the form to relate to it. Even not relating fully to a mitzvah is problematic, even when it involves ignoring and not evading. A Jew must be saturated with an ambition and longing for mitzvot and not, God forbid, view them as a burden he is inescapably stuck with that he tries to cast off at the first opportunity. This point is at the root of the trait of zrizut, acting with enthusiasm and energy, rooted in the obligation not just to serve God, but to serve him with joy and exhilaration. Rabbi Eliezer's statement, if one's prayer is a fixed obligation, is not a supplication, is explained by Rav Oshia as one whose prayer is a burden on him. Of course, there's a special meaning in its home context relating to prayer, but the concept at its root applies to all mitzvot. And as we saw before, this is how he understands the Gemara Minachot. It's not a hard and fast legal principle. It's saying that, no, there's more to life than law. And even if it's true that you're exempt for one of the million reasons that we related to, still, a Jew shouldn't just do what he has to do. He should strive to fulfill mitzvot because they're inherently valuable. Reb Lichtenstein similar says this in his article on Aliyah. Even after listing all the reasons why one doesn't have to make Aliyah, he says, but it is beyond me how someone who is imbued with the values of the Torah shouldn't at least think about it, shouldn't at least want to do it, because there's more to life than law. And this was, as people pointed out, after Lichtenstein passed away, a common method that he used in Psak. He would outline all the sources, he would give you all the possibilities, he would rule maybe Lakula, and then he would still tell you, but I expect you to reach for the heavens, even if you're not obligated to. He expected that from himself, and more terrifyingly, he expected that from everybody else. He makes one more meta-halachic argument, and this is on the last page. However, the question itself, especially when asked by Israeli youth groups that stand for education and service of Hashem and fear of God, read Bnei Akiva, that's explicit in the Hebrew, that no small number of Bnei Torah are involved in is problematic. For decades, I was in the diaspora in places where the mitzvah of Sukkah was not considered an easy mitzvah. And I was never asked about using the traveler's exemption. One is far from a sukkah during the day. Did it ever enter the mind of a businessman that strives to scrupulously fulfill mitzvot and in the course of his business finds himself in New York skyscrapers to eat his lunch in his office because there's no sukkah in his vicinity? Right? If anyone saw last year, right, Google built a sukkah so that people working in Google don't have to eat outside. Right? This is standard. Did a student who views himself as rooted in Torah and fear of God and finds himself forced to spend a long day in university, I'm sorry to all of you, university library ever think of eating in the cafeteria because the campus did not have a sukkah? Is it possible that in Israel, where the mitzvah of sukkah is both easier and more inclusive, a mitzvah that even many who are not generally observant still relate to in one way or another, is it possible that here Bnei Torah should avoid keeping this mitzvah in its fullness? I am well aware that many believe that there's much educational value to youth groups tehillim, mostly because of how it deepens the love and relationship to Eretz Israel. They also claim is that the days of Chol Hamoed are most appropriate for scheduling tehillim. As an outsider, it's difficult for me to judge. However, I am convinced that except for extremely extenuating circumstances, the most important educational message we can pass on to our youth during Sukkot is deepening the awareness and sensitivity for observance and enthusiasm about mitzvot, even if this means some difficulty and even if it involves sacrifice. Right. So in addition to his general position that we should always strive for mitzvot, he also notes that he was, you know, very pragmatic in this sense. We have to think about the message that we are conveying, right? If the argument is that we are going on trips because, right, Bnei Akiva is trying to strengthen commitment, so you also have to think, right, what message are you sending across if the cost of getting people to love Israel and going on trips is that Sukkah is not that important and we're willing to employ exemptions, right? So Reb Lichtenstein notes that in addition to pure halacha, there's A, the meta-halachic values, and two, educational values that we have to think about as well. And in general, that's an important message that, right, the story doesn't end when we come up with a p'tur. The story begins because we still have to ask not just what are we obligated to do, but what does God want us to do? What message are we sending to ourselves and our community? I should just note in brackets that this notion that there's a heter because of Avas Eretz Yisrael is in fact, in the end, the heter that Rav Yaakov Ariel uses. He doesn't love it, but he's willing to use it. that many times Rabbi Yaakov Arel spoke about the differences between him and Rilchenstein was the difference between an American looking in and someone who grew up in the Israeli culture. Right, for an Israeli who grew up, that rang more true for him than it did for Rilchenstein. But if you see, otherwise, Rabbi Yaakov Arel's analysis on this point is similar to Rilchenstein's. Okay, so I think in conclusion, there are reasons to think that you're chayv mikra din, there are reasons to think that you're patur, but even if you're technically exempt, we always have to remember that there's more to life than halacha psuka. We have to think about the meta values and the educational values in our community when making our decisions. Shana tova, chag sameach.